Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about the brand new Destination Freedom radio play that will debut on KGNU tomorrow evening. It's a live performance from the Newman Center for the Arts in Denver, and it's Black with a capital B that deals with a police shooting and the Black Lives Matter movement. Then we'll hear from three members of a Boulder delegation that recently visited Nablus in Palestine as part of the Sister City project. We'll hear about their experience and their takeaways from the visit. Then two regular Thursday morning features. We'll get the latest cannabis news from Leland Rucker, followed by the latest food news with John Lendorf on Radio Nibbles. After headlines from the BBC, it's time for another in our quarterly series on conflict resolution. Today, Sam Fuqua hosts a discussion on politics and conflict, how to talk about hot topics. As always, your calls will be welcome. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Hannah Lee Myers.
Wednesday, the Adams County Commissioners unanimously approved a six-month freeze on new oil and gas permits. The Denver Post reports the Adams County Commissioners expect the moratorium to affect around 100 planned fossil fuel extraction sites that have not yet submitted paperwork, and all operating and permitted oil and gas wells will not be impacted. Adams County leadership says they are putting a hold on new wells in response to proposed legislation that would in part challenge how drilling sites are regulated by giving more power to local municipalities so they can choose where new wells can be located within their counties. That legislation, called SB 181, is quickly making its way through the Colorado legislature and is expected to be signed into law as early as April. Members of the oil and gas industry are saying Adams County's oil and gas moratorium is hasty and will negatively impact the economy and local jobs. Around three quarters of the people who spoke at last night's three-hour county commissioners meeting did speak out in opposition to the moratorium, and many criticized Adams County commissioners for only giving 24-hour notice in advance of the public hearing and vote. Adams County says they will use the six-month hold on new permits to work with oil and gas industry stakeholders to craft new local regulations in accordance with the provisions of SB 181. Colorado lawmakers on Wednesday introduced two bills into the House that would ask voters this November whether they want to forgo certain tax refunds and instead have that money diverted to public schools, transportation, and higher ed. The Denver Post reports the bills are an effort to bypass Tabor, or the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. House Speaker Casey Becker, a Democrat from Boulder, told the Denver Post that while this isn't a long-term solution in terms of needs for funding for transportation and education, it is a really good first step. Currently, Tabor means that state and local governments have to return all tax dollars they collect above the amount that is set by an annually calculated formula, which has tied the state's hands in raising any taxes for public spending. The city of Boulder is forming a working group with members of over a dozen Native American tribes for input on the renaming of a park at the mouth of Boulder Canyon. Rod Bruski has more.
City of Boulder and indigenous tribes from across the plains and mountain states had a two-day meeting discussing agreements on ceremonial practices on open space, land, and protections of cultural resources. The city is also asking for input from the tribes in regards to the new naming of Settlers Park. They'll meet again next March. For KGNU, I'm Rod Bruski.
Wednesday, the city of Boulder announced they're inviting members of the community to share input on a proposed charter for a police oversight task force that will direct the creation of a future community oversight board. In a press release, the city outlined their plan to create an 11-member task force, at least half of whom would identify as persons of color, Latinx, LGBTQA, a person with a disability, or someone experiencing homelessness. The Community Oversight Board will review complaints made about police in Boulder raised by community members. The creation of the task force comes in response to public outcry after former Boulder District Attorney Stan Garnett was appointed to review a recent case of racial profiling by Boulder police. The task force is expected to meet between May and October of this year, with recommendations to the city due by October 31st. The city has prepared a possible charter for this task force and is asking for community input on the proposed charter before the council considers whether to adopt it on April 2nd. The draft charter is available for public viewing at the city's website, where community members can also email any suggested revisions by noon on April 1st. Expect a high today around 57 degrees, low tonight around 34 degrees under mostly sunny skies today. There is a chance for storms tomorrow with highs in the 50s through Monday. It's currently around 32 degrees on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
It's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m., KGNU will do a live broadcast of a brand new play that's part of the Destination Freedom radio series presented by our own Donnie Betts. It's Black with a capital B, and it takes a look at what's happening right now with police shootings and Black Lives Matter. I spoke with Donnie Betts, who's presenting Black with a capital B. He says the play was written by Lamaria Amina.
So people can come in with the expectation that they will see and hear a great production that talks about the heart of the matter of communication between races, but told from the perspective of mothers. The mothers are who you see really on the front line, and fathers too, but really mothers you see on the front line when it comes to people that are impacted by police violence or just gun violence in general. So when you have this perspective of two mothers meeting at a rally, at a vigil, not knowing each other until they start having a conversation and realizing that they share this bond, that one is connected through the death of her son, one is connected to her husband being a police officer. And then we find out what that connection is as we go throughout the show. Also, I think within this play, people have a lot of misconceptions about a lot of Black Lives Matters too. So Lamaria's mother is very involved with 5280 Black Lives Matters and Black Lives Matters in general. And so putting that into perspective through the lens of an artistic bent, I think it's very helpful for the audience to understand as well. It's not preachy or anything like that. It just tells and breaks it down in everyday language. This is what it is. This is what it's about. This is what our goals are. And in this case, this is what the goals are this particular mother is.
Well, unfortunately, this is a reality for many mothers here in the U.S. And I know this afternoon on Metro, you're going to be speaking to one such mother. Give our listeners a sense of what to expect this afternoon.
That's correct. So Tamara Rice is a mother, Tamir Rice, who was shot 5 years ago now in Cleveland, Ohio. He's 12 years old. Within 2 to 3 seconds when the police arrived, he was already shot down. It was someone gave a 911 call that there was someone in the park close to where they live that was walking around with a handgun. Well, it was a toy gun. But the officers who arrived didn't identify themselves to say, you know, what are you doing? What are you holding? That sort of thing, and give the kid a chance. So when I talked to Ms. Rice, she talked about the impact it has had upon her and her family. And she said, you know, my life changed once I got the knock on the door. And not only that, her daughter, one of her daughters, had to watch her brother die because she was tackled trying to go to her brother's aid. So because they didn't give the kid CPR until after quite some time, try to revive him. So she talks about that and the work that she's trying to do now there in Cleveland so that this type of things doesn't happen again, by giving other young children places to go and a safe environment to play and do whatever they need to do. She's starting an art center there in Cleveland with some of the things she's been doing and the people that are helping her there. So it's just a powerful conversation that we're going to have that she openly and willingly talks about the impact that the shooting has had on her in these 5 years since it happened. And instead of getting him ready for prom now, she's remember him this way.
And that conversation will be this afternoon at 3 on Metro. Donnie Betts speaking with the mother of Tamir Rice. But tomorrow evening at 7:30 p.m., there will be that debut of Black with a capital B as part of the award-winning Destination Freedom series from the Black Radio Days, produced by Donnie Betts. And the play is written by Lamaria Amina. You can hear it live on KGNU starting at 7:30 tomorrow evening. You can also catch it if you would like to be in the audience. It's going to be at the Newman Centre at the University of Denver. And the play will be followed by a community discussion led by Donnie Betts, and it will feature the Aurora Police Chief, as well as activists from Black Lives Matter and other community members, including Dr. Deb Ortega, who's the founder of DU's Latino Centre for Community Engagement and Scholarship, and also a member of the Aurora City Council, will be there as well. You can find out more information online at kgnu.org. Well, in May of 2017, the mayors of Boulder and Nablus in Palestine signed an agreement officially making the two cities sister cities. Since then, two delegations have gone from Boulder to Nablus. The most recent one was there in January and February. I spoke with Ryan Wilson, Sarah Larrabee and Raza Akta, who were part of the second ever delegation from Boulder to Nablus. And Raza says that the idea of the delegations is to give people from Boulder a sense of what everyday life is for people over there in Nablus. And I asked him if he was surprised by anything that he experienced on the visit.
I think the biggest surprise for me is that the people are they're not victims. They don't portray themselves as victims. They don't feel like they're victims. They are very lively. They have a very real sense of humor, which I really related to in a way.
Yes.
But I think at the same time, the occupation is there in every way. It's in the water, because the water is given to the Palestinians from the Israelis, and they're only allowed to have a certain amount, and they charge a very exorbitant amount for that water. I mean, it's really interesting to see how they're living their life with all these really difficulties, but they've kind of decided that they're not going to let this get them down.
Well, this idea of occupation, Sarah, you were in Israel back in the 1970s, mm-hmm. and you said this time you noticed it was so much more occupied. What does that mean day to day?
Well, day to day, it depends on where you are. Nablus, our sister city, is grazed by being in the interior. But there are two huge refugee camps there. There are bombed out areas. There are places where people live in one tiny room with no water, and they've been that way for 70 years. So I think two of the most eloquent things I heard, just it's from their experience, because if you were to go there, you would think, oh, these people are, they're occupied, they're busy, the shops, what you see. But what is felt is that they can't go out of their own place. We were hiking right in the hills above Nablus, and the beautiful Palestinian poppies were blooming, and there were olive trees and lemon trees everywhere, so it was beautiful. But we got to the top of this old ruin, and the person who was taking us on the hike said, the hills, at the top of every hill, there are these 2,000, 3,000-year-old ruins, and they used to light fires if there was danger. So they would light continuous fires so the whole area that would be involved would know. And this is thousands of years ago. And he said, if you go to the next hill, you can see the Sea of Galilee, and you can also see the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. And I said, oh, wow, we're that close. And he said, well, for you, you're close. But for us, New York City is closer. They're not allowed to go to their own ocean. And then one man who was the minister. He was close to 80 years old. He was the minister for the Greek Christian Church under the Pope, and he just spoke very eloquently about how much he wanted to be free. He said, if I leave Nablus, I'd be like a fish out of water. I just want one day of freedom on my own land. And his children had been born under the occupation, were always under the occupation. And he said, please, God, just give me one day of freedom. It was so touching. So the lack of freedom is manifested in the fact that they can't go anywhere. They have apartheid of the roads, as you know, they're apartheid and their lands are being taken.
And just to clarify what that means, there are roads that they're not allowed to go on.
The roads to the settlements are brand new highways, and Palestinians or local people that have lived there for thousands of years aren't allowed on these fancy roads. And there's checkpoints for people. We talked to one young guy who's 16 years old, and he managed to come from the villages to go to a English-speaking school because I guess he was a bright guy, and his family and his school teachers decided he should brave an English-speaking school as a junior in high school, which was very challenging. And he was telling us about his challenges, and one of the big challenges was getting to school. It was a 20-minute drive if you were to just go, mm-hmm. but with all the checkpoints, it was an hour and a half to go to school. And the people at the checkpoints were 2 years older than he was, and they had automatic weapons, and they got to decide whether he could complete his exam or not, or even go there.
Ryan, what was your biggest takeaway now from the whole trip?
The most visceral experience I had there was just the feeling of anger and powerlessness that came up in me, just in being witness to something that's going on in this day and age. And it's really heartbreaking. And at the same time, like Raza was saying, you know, just incredibly welcoming people are, how incredibly generous they are, how willing to help. You know, it's hard to believe that we live in a time when there's first and class, second class citizens, but you know, it's good for people to see that, and also to see that the Palestinians are not, you know, people to be afraid of, and that it's actually I actually felt a lot safer in Palestine than I did in many parts of Israel.
Well, you were all there as part of a delegation from the city of Boulder, because Boulder is twinned with Nablus. And so what does that mean for people in Nablus, Ryan? I mean, when you were there as part of this delegation, what were you hearing from them about what it means to be connected somewhat to Boulder? Was it significant for them at all?
I think that in general, you know, Nablus is, you know, very welcoming place. And I think people are highly educated, and they know that the United States is funding Israel, and we're the number one enablers in the world of their current state. And yet they also know that we are not our government, and that we're, you know, they totally get that.
I would just like to add to that the relationship that we have is a little bit different, because in the state, the sister city relationships are not funded the way they are in other parts of the world. So when they have European sister cities, they come and they establish schools, they help them with some projects. And for us, it's more of a sort of a volunteer driven projects. So in the end, we do intend to, you know, work with Nablus on some projects there where we can add value beyond just having a, you know, a human or person-to-person interaction. And I think that's what they are also interested in, because mm-hmm. for a relationship to really develop and thrive, you need it to be more than just about a delegation that comes and visits the city and, you know, and then leaves. And hopefully more people will go and visit. I think that's the most important thing that we can do. But at the same time, we do want to, we're working on that. I guess we don't have an answer right now, but we are trying to figure out ways of working with them.
And that was Raza Akhtar, Sarah Larrabee and Ryan Wilson. They recently returned from the second ever delegation from Boulder to Nablus, a city in Palestine that is twinned with Boulder. And if you're interested in finding out more about the Sister City Project, you can go to their website, bouldernablus.org. Leland Rucker is a senior editor at Sensi Magazine, and he joins us on Wednesday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today, we're going to take a look at something that we've been looking at, and that is drug testing of employees and what it means if they test positive for cannabis in a state like Colorado, where it's actually legal. There's a new report on this.
Yeah, you know, one of the tenets that helped steer Amendment 64 to passage in 2012 was that it still allowed private companies to drug test their employees and fire them for using cannabis. And that's a sticky point for people who are advocates, because drug testing someone for something that's legal just doesn't seem right. But it was necessary to get it passed. That was something that was necessary to get it passed. And now 5 years later, a group called the Employers Council, which is a group of businesses, did a poll, and they found that you know, some companies are starting to make changes in their drug policies when it comes to cannabis, you know, and there's jobs that can benefit from drug testing, you know, there's but a lot of jobs really don't have anything to do with whether or not you're high or whether or not you've used cannabis or whether or not you've drank or whatever it is. And the Employers Council found out that about half of the Colorado companies that are part of this group won't fire a worker for the first time positive test for pot. And that's down 5 percentage points from 2014. When I think about the whole thing, though, they don't count companies that, for instance, have to test because of Department of Transportation guidelines that they have to follow.
So if you're operating a vehicle heavy equipment, then they're not including those type of testing in this statistic.
And a lot of large corporations still haven't made any changes in their policies whatsoever. And, you know, I see their point of view. Their point of view is they want to have more control over their employees, and drug testing allows them that.
There was a very highly litigated case of a medical marijuana patient in Colorado, and he was, I'm not sure if he was paraplegic, but he was certainly confined to a wheelchair, was on medical marijuana, and had challenged the fact that he was fired when he tested positive for cannabis, saying it was medicinal. He was still fired, and the court sided, I believe, with his employer in that case.
Yeah, and that's still the case. I mean, that's still the case, and it'll probably continue to be the case, even though, as these statistics suggest, there is a slowdown. At least employers now are thinking more about it. Now, there's one other thing to think about, too, here, and that's that the unemployment rate is very low. So if you're going to get rid of all employees because they test positive for cannabis, I think that's probably part of it too. And that's probably part of the reason that at least some companies are doing this. I don't know if it really means anything yet, but it's definitely a positive step that those numbers are going down.
And people can read more about that online at sensimag.com. Catch the hard copy at newsstands around the Front Range. And you can hear Leland Rucker on Thursday mornings right here on KGNU. Time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats at KGNU on Thursday mornings. And John Lendorf joining us live for Radio Nibbles. Good morning.
Good morning, Maeve. It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day. Happy spring.
And, you know, we wanted to start out today just saying a thank you and sending out a huge hug to all the folks who became members during the drive, but especially to the food industry, to the restaurants, to the coffee makers, to all the folks who fed us, who donated thank you gifts, and have generally supported KGNU, the whole culinary, agricultural, food community for all these years.
We had so many local restaurants stepping forward to offer us gift certificates that we can pass on as thank you gifts, to provide food for our volunteers who are answering the phones. I mean, it really is such an incredible output of support by the local food industry during our membership drive. So we're so excited about that. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who contributed during our fund drive.
You can still do it if you want.
Absolutely. Well, there's lots of other food news going on.
Yeah, there's sort of a historical note here. Everyone knows Snarf's sandwiches. It started in Boulder and has slowly spread. And on March 27th, they're going to close their, as they say, their flagship store. It's 2128 Pearl Street. For those who have been here long enough, Snarf started less than a block away in what was a former A&W drive-in. It was a shack. And but they were forced to move because of redevelopment pressures in downtown Boulder. And now it's happening again, the building, the property. And they do have three other places in town, but it's doubtful they're going to find, you know, another place downtown. Another legendary spot is not reopening, the Rocky Flats Lounge down south on 93. Just didn't work out with the owners of the building, and they will take their fish fry elsewhere. And the Happy Trails Cafe is now closed in Nederland after 25 years.
Oh, and so what was the reason behind the Happy Trails? Because that has been such an iconic place in Nederland. I know you'd often see bikers parked outside and cyclists and, of course, and the folks who live in that as well.
I think it's gotten harder for independent coffee shops to survive.
Well, apart from the closures, there are other things that are happening that are, I suppose, more positive. And that is, there's a seed exchange and open house. And this is an opportunity for folks to get seeds, maybe for their gardens, but particularly schools who can maybe get seeds for their school gardens. Tell us about the seed exchange.
This is Slow Food Boulder County, and they're teaming up. They're going to be at the Mountain Fountain in Hygiene tonight. And you can get seeds, you can bring seeds and trade them, you can sign up for a CSA, you can taste local food, and the schools can pick up their seeds for their gardens.
And just real quick, lots of other things to look forward to. Longmont Restaurant Week is March 29th through April 7th.
Yes, and so you better sign up for the more popular eateries. It's a good way to try new places.
And I know you're putting a call out for some of those spiral-bound community cookbooks that used to be pretty ubiquitous. Certainly local parishes or churches used to do them.
I have dozens of them that are sort of historical documents. And I'm wondering whether churches, diseases, organizations like KGNU put out I'm wondering if anyone does that anymore, or whether the internet has made spiral-bound cookbooks
a thing of the past. Well, you can let John know at nibbles@boulderweekly.com. And don't forget, you can read John's Nibbles column today. It's about baking on the right side of the brain. That's in the Boulder Weekly. And what's the best thing you've tasted recently?
It was a Monte Cristo sandwich at Steuben's in Arvada. Came with a side of raspberry jam.
Yum. Well, don't forget, you can also catch archived radio Nibbles at news.kgnu.org.
And only 16 cooking days until the farmer's market opens.
Wow. Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Oh, do have a knish, Nisha. Ask him the latkey, Matki. Chili con carne for Barney. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Face, Buster, Shane.